All right, from deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. So let me explain a little bit about the concept of defrag to begin with. Defrag is a method to take things that are all kind of wiggity-whack all over the place and put them in a logical order so that they can be more easily understood and more efficient and effective. So one of the things that Gov Maharaj and I do on Defrag is we sort through people's problems that they might have with Microsoft hardware, software, or other issues, and try to fix those for them. And sometimes the tools that we use to defrag problems, we don't get a chance to go into them deeply and talk about them and stuff like that. You filled in for Gov a couple of times on Defrag.
I did.
And you are capable of doing these deep dives on some of the tools. So this is what we're going to do on Defrag Tools. We're going to talk about some of the tools that we use, some of the methods that people can use to help troubleshoot their own problems and be more efficient computer users.
And the simple thing of where to get the tool.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes not that easy.
So introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
So I'm Andrew Richards. I'm a senior escalation engineer in support. I troubleshoot for a living. That's what I do. Support cases come in, and the hardest of the hard hit my desk.
Yeah.
And the tools we're going to show over these 10, 20, 30 weeks ahead are the tools I use every single day.
Yeah.
And so I use the tool for hours at a time and have become quite proficient at all of them. So, yeah, so we're going to deep dive into one tool per week. And
what are we talking about today?
We are actually going to do the fundamental boring thing in the first place is actually go and get the tools.
Nice.
So, and there's also a little tweak to that is that the tools kind of need configuring.
Yeah.
And so we're going to go through some boring things like environment variables and stuff like that. And
I can't wait.
It's going to be awesome. But the whole point is that you're at the end of this, and I'm going to do it real time, so there's no cutting here to show how long it takes. You'll end up with a USB stick.
Every proper defragger should have their magical, it's like a wand in Harry Potter.
What we're about to do today is on this stick already because it's always in my pocket.
Yeah.
And I just walk around with it.
Yeah, excellent. And I have mine as well.
Yeah,
and
so
always have one.
This is the whole, it's everybody can use this. You can use this to fix your neighbor's PC, you can use this to fix your mum's PC, you can use this to go fix that mission critical production server.
Yeah.
The tools we're going to talk about, mostly non-invasive, which means you can do them live in production. No worrying about data loss or outage to the server, stuff like that. And when there is one of those issues, I'll make sure I point it out. But across the board, it's non-invasive, so you should feel very confident to go ahead and do this on any machine there is.
And since this thumb drive is pretty much the lightsaber to the Jedi.
It is.
Tell us a little bit about the thumb drive. What size thumb drive do you carry around? Do you have any preference? Does it matter?
It doesn't really matter. I only have a 4 gig stick, and I think there's a fair bit free. I think we're talking about less than, a couple hundred meg.
Yeah.
I know that SysInternals, which is the major part of the Jedi, it's the main lightsaber.
Yeah.
Is only like 40 meg. Well, not even that, maybe a bit less. And then there's a couple other tools that only can add up to equally about the same. So we're not talking about much.
Okay.
Definitely, the amount that it's easy to copy it over on an RDP session to the to the foreign server.
You're not keeping the Windows disk on that thumb drive.
No. This is purely just the tools.
Yeah.
And roughly, this show is about the tools that you don't get with Windows that make you a Jedi Master. It's the secret tricks that are out there. 99% of them are free on Microsoft.com. Fully usable by anybody, and you can go off and be that elite master chief of troubleshooter.
There you go.
Yeah.
Let's get started.
Yeah, so today's all about collecting the things. And what we're going to do is collect two main sets of tools. And those tools are SysInternals tools. So SysInternals used to be an external company, a freeware set of code that was run by a company called WinInternals that was owned by Mark Rusinovich and Bryce Cogney. Oh, sorry, Cogswell. And they were acquired by Microsoft in 2004 or 6 or something, and they're now a Microsoft product, and so you can now get them from Microsoft. So across the board here, I'm going to show you how to do this if you can't remember where it is. So for the case of SysInternals, it's as simple as going to sysinternals.com. This used to be the outside website and now redirects to a Tetnet sub-website. In the case of SysInternals, there's a little link up here at the top called SysInternals Suite. SysInternals has, I forget the number,
a lot.
A lot. 40, 50 tools maybe. And if I can be encouraged to do it, I will have an episode on every single tool at some point.
Nice.
That is the goal. While we're talking about system internals, there is a book to go with it. Every single tool in this list is a chapter or a subchapter in this book. If you can't wait for 20 weeks for me to slowly get through them all,
Yeah. Go
buy the book. It's like $20 at, or $25 at Amazon. Absolutely fantastic book. Even if you think you're only going to use one or two tools, Yeah. You should go buy the book. Yeah. The book is fantastic. So sysinternals tools is one of our major things. So we had this sysinternals suite, which is the collection of everything. So roughly, the way this works is every single tool is downloadable by themselves. You can also run them live. So if you go to website live.sysinternals.com/ and then the name of the tool, you can actually run the executable off the network, like an SMB path.
Yeah.
Microsoft has enabled WebDAV protocol on this web farm, and so you can execute it remotely. If you want to download it personally and onto a USB stick, which is what we're doing here, the goal is to have a stick that you can use in a network isolated environment. So this falls in the category of like military places and high security things like SQL Server databases where you don't want the internet. And also things like when you've got viruses on your box. You don't want to turn your network on, right?
Yeah.
And so it's all about getting a nice isolated set of tools. So that's what this is all about. So this one's quite simple. It's a zip download. And what I'm going to do is build up an area on my hard disk. Now, I'm a fan of making a directory called my, because it's a really short name, kind of familiar. You'll notice that I never put things in program files, and there's a very important reason for that. We don't want, in production systems, auditing software to pick it up that something got installed that wasn't expected.
Yeah.
Right? And so all the tools we're talking about here are Xcopy tools. You don't have to run the MSI. You don't have to do anything like that. So we save the zip file. Now, how do you know that you have the latest and greatest? On the main page, there is an RSS feed. Subscribe to it, grab the link, put it into Outlook, make it one of the RSS downloadable things. About once per month, there'll be an RSS feed saying this tool got updated. Just go get the zip file, the entire zip file, and just blad it over the top of the one you already have.
Yeah.
So we've downloaded it. Now, first tip for the day, it can be quite annoying if you do it the wrong way. If you unblock this now, it will unblock every single file inside the zip file. If you unzip it and then want to use the tool, you'll have to individually go to every single exe and unblock it.
Yeah.
So remember to unblock the zip file, and then we're just going to extract it to sysinternals. So 27 meg. Not too much, right?
12 meg zip, 27 meg unzipped.
Yeah. So while that's happening, I'm going to grab the path, and this is my next tip. Bring up computer and go properties. Where is it under? Is it advanced? Yep, advanced, environment variables, go down to path, edit, and we're going to shove this on the end.
Right. So semicolon and then the
semicolon,
new path.
Semicolon and then the new path. Right. You're going to use these tools so often, if this is your main machine, so often that you should just go do that. By the way, this machine, I deliberately kept it clean. I made a brand new, fresh install of Windows. There is nothing on here. There is no Office. There is no anything. The only thing I've done is load the device drivers for my laptop so the network works and stuff like that. I installed Security Essentials for antivirus, and that's about it. The only other obvious ones I did is I went to adobe.com and clicked on the three main or four main Adobe things that that you do on every machine. And so there you have, and Silverlight as well. And so this is a very clean box. And I want to stress that because it shows you what you don't need to have. You don't need .NET here to make this thing work. You don't need all these other things. So, all right, so this is downloaded, and here's all our tools. And we're not going to go into any tools today, but sysinternals is done. Mm-hmm. Step one. All right. Step two, there is a package called the Windows SDK. And you go, well, what's this? So SDK stands for Software Development Kit. Roughly, we don't want to deliver on Windows software that people aren't going to use.
Yeah.
And so the SDK is used to primarily give you compilers and other things. What we do use it for is also as a release vehicle for support tools. Right? And so the SDK comes out with each service pack. there's two versions for Windows 7. Version 7 with RTM, and it says, and .NET Framework 3.5 at that point. And then when it came out for Service Pack 1, which is what this one is, you get the .NET 4. You can tell it's for Service Pack 1 because it has a version number of 7.1. It doesn't match the version of Windows, because Windows is 6.1.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to start this downloading because this is going to take a while. So I'm going to start the download. Now, this is actually before... I'll get this starting running.
But it said it was only 400K download.
So, yeah. So this is the web installer. Yeah. So
tricky.
You want to do this on a machine that's internet connected.
Yeah.
And what we're going to do is... I'm going to get this started because I want to get the get it running. You can make it. So what we're going to do is install this. Now, we're not developing here, so we don't care about the samples, the compilers, and all that stuff. Now, you have two ways of looking at this. You can either install it straight away right now, right? But then you won't end up with the ability to pick it up and put it somewhere else.
Yeah.
So we're actually going to unselect those three, and this is the three tools we're going for here, Application Verifier, which is the tool that works out how an application is misbehaving. Mm-hmm. Performance Toolkit, which was we'll go into a deep dive on things like how to work out why your machine doesn't boot fast.
Yeah.
Why is your disk running slow? Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Massive topic. Debugging tools for Windows, massive topic, which we'll get to eventually. We'll go through why an application's hung, why applications crashed, why the system's hung, and why the system's crashed. So there's four episodes there. Debugging tools for Windows also is the fundamental of what we need. This actually has a DLL in it that makes system kernels and other tools much more powerful, and we'll go into that soon. So what we're going to do is install these four. We might as well get the Visual C runtime at the same time. And so what this is going to do is instead of installing it, it's actually going to install the installer. So all it's going to do is install a MSI file on the hard drive. So while this is running, it's downloading from the internet, just what we selected. What I'm going to do is go back and explain this web page. So how do you find this really, really quickly? What you do, back to Bing, is you type Windows SDK 7, and you can see 7.1 is already there, but if you want to force the point, .NET 4 is the key.
Okay. All right.
Now, this is episode 1, and we're doing this about a month or two before RTM of Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
I did consider doing the Windows 8 version of this, but I want to give you the release bits. I don't want to give you the beta bits.
Yeah.
And so we will come back and do a brief recap of how to do exactly what we're doing now, but with the Windows 8 way of doing it. And they did change it a bit. So, this is the way to do it. So number one here, SDK. The point is to remember Windows 7 and .NET Framework 4. That's the two keys. The download was a web download, right?
Yeah.
If you have plenty of bandwidth and just want to keep this more offline, there is an ISO download as well.
Yeah.
And so you can get to the same thing by doing that. All right, so this is installing in the background. And it takes a little while. And so what's going to do that, we're going to talk about the other files that we want. So we need to set up the files that we're going to use, but we also need to set up the environment variables. And particularly, we're going to be worrying about symbols. So,
and explain symbols.
All right. So when a program is compiled, you compile it into an .exe or DLL. So let's say that you make a program called callcars, right? You'll end up with a program called callcars.exe. And then it will be what's known as a module name, right? So it'll be callcars. And let's say that we have a function called add tires to cool cars, right? What you'll see in all these tools is cool cars exclamation mark, or in Microsoft parlance, bang. We use the word bang for exclamation mark.
Yeah.
And then add tires. And so you can only get that string representation with symbols. And so what happens is when we compile it, it just turns into numbers. We say add tires is at the start of the DLL, the .exe, plus 11283 bytes, right? And that's where the assembler starts for that function. And then what we need to do is a translation between what's the .exe you've got in it, the raw assembler, the hexadecimal in the file, and these nice string names.
Mm-hmm.
And so the symbol sits between the .exe, the symbols, and the source code. And so what happens is when you compile the source code, we say, this function, by the way, is at this offset, and we put that in a symbol file. Symbol files have the extension PDB, program database, right? And so you'll hear PDB files. So the install's done. So next thing we do is need to set up symbols, as I said. So I have a batch file here to do this, and I'll bring it up. Bump up the font a bit. So this is a lot of gobbledygook, right? It doesn't really make much sense. Microsoft provides symbols for the Windows products, all right? And so there are things called private and public symbols. And the difference is Microsoft doesn't want to give out exactly how the code works, but we want to give you a helping hand. And so the symbols that are on this website, HTTP, microsoftdownload.microsoft.com, download symbols, are public symbols. And so what we tell you is function names. But if you compile your own code, then you will. The symbol information also says, oh, by the way, at this offset in this function, there's a variable, an int that's called foo.
Yeah.
And so it goes deeper and deeper and deeper. All right. The symbol server from Microsoft only has Microsoft symbols. Microsoft public symbols for Windows. There is other corporations. I know that Citrix, off the top of my head, also runs a symbol server. All right. So what's all this junk on the screen? As I said, I'm making a directory called my. And what we do is with symbols is we pull them down from, in this case, a website, and then put them on the local hard drive so you don't have to go to the internet over and over again.
Yeah.
And my cache, so the copy is from this website, and then it gets, each time there's a star, it's a copy, right? So it tries the first one, and if it's not there, it tries the next one. So you could go, my office symbols have a share, and what would happen is if it's not in this folder, see my sim, mm-hmm. it would look on this office server.
Yeah.
If it's not there, it goes to the internet. Once it's found it in the internet, it will copy it to here, and then it will copy it to here. And so next time, the chain of symbols will be there.
Nice.
That's what this SRV star on at the front is. That's the magic of SRV. There's a DLL in the debugger folder called SimSRV, which says, oh, I'm prefacing this string. I'm going to let this DLL worry about it, and I'm going to do all this. Right. So what we have is me just creating the folders to make sure that they can exist. Mm-hmm. The first one's for source code. This is actually more Microsoft internal because we can download, when we have a different URL for internal, the source code for Windows as well. In the public case, you would just put the source code for your own code. Source code is, when you bring it up in the tool, it says, okay, here's the source code, and you see it. Symbol path is the mapping, A to B. And sim cache is to do with that Windows Performance Toolkit tool, the one I talked about with boot managing analysis. And so it also needs a cache. Notice it doesn't have the SRV star. So what this command does is it uses setx. Setx is a persistent version of set command. And M means do it at the machine level. So you walk up to machine, run this batch file, and then these three paths are set, and your machine is set in every single tool to work. You don't have to go into debugging tools. You don't have to go into toolkit. You don't have to go into system terminals and type it because it's in an environment variable.
Yeah.
So it's just like, sweet.
And so when you go to another machine with this thumb drive, do you set up the environment variables on that machine as well?
Every time,
same thing you do here.
Yeah, and obviously you're going to lose your cache. Yeah. I think my cache at my desk is 30, 60 gigabytes.
Wow.
It's huge. You want to keep a cache. If you are analyzing a system where you just can't get to symbols and you have to analyze it because the data is so in PII rich that you can't take it off the server, you actually can download symbols of the Microsoft symbols as an ISO file from download.com and install it like an MSI, and then it just goes into a folder. Now the problem is it's the symbols at RTM or the symbols at SP1. It doesn't include any Windows updates.
Yeah.
So the other thing is the Microsoft symbol server doesn't include hotfixes. So if you've contacted support, we don't publish the hotfix symbols. So that's not too hard. It's not too, and we'll put this code on the show notes. The next one is more of a diagnostics thing. So this one you don't do by default. You do this if you're having issues using symbols. This is just how to turn logging on. Once again, we'll put this on the site. It's just one of those things that you go, oh, I'm pulling my hair out. I don't understand why this tool can't get to symbols. And so this turns the logging on. And then the last one is an option that when you open up the debugger, by default, it runs a command called bang analyze or exclamation mark analyze. If you don't want to turn that on, this is the command for that. So yeah, pretty simple environment variables, nothing really, nothing too onerous, right? All right, so SDK installed. The files go into Microsoft SDKs. Windows, because it's the Windows SDK, 7.1 as we talked about, and then you get this folder called redist, mm-hmm. which is what the whole point of what we're doing. And here's our four things. And so what we do is we just copy these four folders into our My folder. And what's in here is
you
just...
You get VC.
Does that don't need it.
Okay.
I just installed it because at some point someone's going to...
Yeah.
When I install something, someone's going to want it, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, three tools, MSIs, we're getting Itanium and AMD and x86. Mm-hmm. With Windows 8, Itanium will disappear and you'll see ARM. So you see WOA as the letters. Debugging tools for Windows and Windows Performance Toolkit. All right, so debugging tools for Windows and the Windows Performance Toolkit actually are both Xcopy-based programs. So what you can do is actually run the MSI now and install it and then copy the folder that it makes. All right, and so I'm not going to do it to all of them, but I'm just going to do one. Now,
so everything you need to run this installs into that one directory?
Mm. What we're making is a directory of the assets we need. Mm-hmm. We're going for one time only now, on your master thing where you're making the USB stick, run them. And we're going to actually run it, we run it here instead of in the installer because the installer doesn't let you change the path.
Yeah.
Right? You remember how I said we don't want to be invasive on the box?
Yes.
Yeah. And so what we're going to do is the Microsoft standard is to install the x64 debugger in a directory called c:\debuggers. Mm-hmm. And there's no real standard for x86, so I use c:\debuggers_x86.
Yeah.
We actually need to install them both. You go, well, why is that? The debugging tools, the 64-bit ones, can only debug 64-bit processors, 64-bit .NET processors. Just because of limitations on the way it's architected. And this x86 one is the same thing for .NET. So .NET 2 applications, by default, run a 64-bit on 64-bit Windows. .NET 4 applications, built with Visual Studio 2010, default to x86. Mm-hmm. Right? So you need both of them installed. So I'm going to quickly install them. This is the old install shield type GUI-ness. Now, this is the trick. You need to press custom. And then we're just going to type in a new path. So as I said, debuggers for the 64-bit one, just the defaults are all perfect. Tiny install, it's only a couple of meg.
Yeah.
I mean, most of this time is making the restore point rather than actually the copy.
Yeah.
So am I, is there too much detail at the moment? What do you want to,
no,
anything you want to clarify?
No, not yet.
Standard waiting.
Although I have wondered when I've installed things. What is it actually doing here? It's not installing. It's making the restore point.
You want
that
to
make sense?
You want to hear a dirty secret?
Sure.
I turn restore points off on every single one of my boxes.
What?
I have never used it.
Oh, I've used it a lot.
So if it's going to crash, I'll just rebuild it.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's really that bad. And most things you can fix with going to safe mode anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I have it turned off, and which means my installs happen.
Well, you're one of the elite Jedis.
Yeah. That's one of the things. I remember we had a conversation on air about should we fix or repave
flatten
a box.
Yeah.
Well, I will not repave any box if I can fix it.
Yeah.
And we'll get to the point in this series where you'll come to the same conclusion where why would I repave it when I can just do 5 minutes of troubleshooting
to fix it.
I forgot to put the... I have an x86 on it. So we ended up with two folders, debuggers, and then also need to USC prompt it, and debuggers x86 when it finally gets there. So that's the tools. I mean, that's all you need. The same thing goes with the Windows Performance Toolkit. You only need the 64-bit ones for that. You don't need to have the two. And so we end up with two folders, and then what we do is that's part of our Jedi trick. So we put it into here, and we now have everything we need. So you now can walk up to a server, copy these on, and just run this tool. There's no MSI,
install needed.
Won't turn up and have removed programs, stuff like that. So, all right, so that's where we're kind of going to end it today. We're going to go on and start using these tools next time, particularly the whole point of installing this whole package is to get this one single file, dbghelp.dll. And you'll notice that, actually, thank you, Mr. Tooltip, see how it's 6.12?
Mm-hmm.
But we installed it for Windows 6.1. The version that ships with the SDK is actually a different elite super version compared to the one that's in the System32 folder. The one that's in System32, this DLL is all about capturing and analyzing a live program. And so this is the guy who makes a dump file. This is the DLL who does that. The version that ships with Windows only can do capture.
Yeah.
It cannot do like playback, if you want to call it that. This version can. And it also has a lot more features in it, and obviously bug fixes, because the one in Windows didn't get serviced. So the version that is 6.12 here for the SDK, for Windows 7 SP1, and then with Windows 8, it'll be 6.13. Absolutely crucial that you have this file. And it's crucial that you have the 64-bit version and the x86 version as well.
Excellent. And so next time we're going to go into how to use your lightsaber.
Yep, we are going to go into probably the most popular tool around. We're going to go into Process Explorer.
Cool.
So which is a systemtails tool, the biggest systemtails tool by far.
Awesome.
So definitely.
Awesome. And that's the show for this week. So join us next time where we will start teaching you how to wield your lightsaber.
Definitely.
Thank you, Andrew.
Pleasure.
See you next time.
See you next week.